Good evening. The race for Congress in the 12th Illinois U.S. House District will be one of the most closely watched contests of the 2012 campaign season, as three parties vie for the seat being vacated by the retirement of incumbent Democrat Jerry Costello of Belleville. Tonight, you're going to hear from each of the candidates seeking your vote this November. They are Green Party candidate Paula Bradshaw of Carbondale, Republican Jason Plummer of O'Fallon, and Democrat William Enyart of Belleville. The candidates will be questioned by Jennifer Fuller of WSIU Radio, Gary Metro, the editor of the Southern Illinois newspaper, and Beth Hunsdorfer of the Belleville News Democrat. I'm Jack Titchener of WSIU Public Television. I'll be the moderator for this evening. We're going to begin with a one-minute opening statement from each candidate, the order of which was determined by the campaigns drawing names from a hat before the program. We're going to begin with Paula Bradshaw.
Well, thank you for inviting me. The Green Party of the United States, like Green Parties around the world, is opposed to the current path that industrialized societies are following, of destroying our environment for short-term profit. We believe that most people want to protect the intricate web of life of which we are a part and the ecosystem on which we depend for our very existence, including our atmosphere, oceans and rivers, forests, and topsoil. Because the U.S. doesn't have the kind of proportional representative democracies that other developed countries have, people here feel that they are forced to vote for one of the two corporate parties, which, as Senator John McCain pointed out, and I quote, run an elaborate influence peddling scheme in which both parties conspire to stay in office by selling the country to the highest bidder, unquote. Today, you have a choice. Greens will not sell out our country to the highest bidder. Greens want to protect our country and put people to work building a society which lives within our planetary means so that future generations will still live in a bountiful land.
Jason Plummer.
Well, first, I'd like to thank everybody for being here today, and I'd like to say a special thank you to all the groups that helped put this together. I've been campaigning up and down the 12th Congressional District for months now, pushing very hard to have debates because we're facing some very serious problems. I think Southern Illinois is facing problems probably more severely than other parts of the state. We see some of the highest unemployment rates in the nation right here in the 12th Congressional District. There's absolutely no reason for it. I've been meeting with people in town halls and meet and greets up and down this district, talking about the problems they're facing, but most importantly, discussing solutions on how we can solve these problems and bring jobs back to Southern Illinois. I think we've laid out a very articulate plan. I think we've laid out a plan that is very specific in addressing our needs. I think this is important because the voters of Southern Illinois deserve a serious conversation. They deserve a positive conversation, and I think they're ready to have a serious conversation about the solutions. I'm proud of my campaign, the fact that we've run a positive campaign based on the solutions, and I look forward to continuing that discussion tonight.
William Enyart.
Good evening. As a member of WSIU, I'm very pleased to be here tonight. You know, I frequently get introduced as Major General Bill Enyart, but I'd like you to know that growing up, when I was born, I wasn't born with two stars. I worked on my grandparents' farm walking the beans. I enlisted in the Air Force at age 19, and after getting out of the Air Force after 4 years, I went to SIU Edwardsville. Then I came to SIU Carbondale for law school. I attended both those universities on the GI Bill, working part-time jobs, and came out of it with a student loan. My wife and I know what it's like to have to pay back student loans. I'm running to level the playing field. I'm running to protect Medicare, to protect Social Security, and I'm running to grow jobs. You know, I'm running also to work for tax fairness. I spent 30 years solving problems. That's the job that I'm asking to be hired for, to solve problems. I have the experience and the credentials to do that job.
It's time for questions now from our panelists. Each candidate will have 1 minute to answer the question. The first question comes from Jennifer Fuller for Paula Bradshaw.
Ms. Bradshaw, the legality of the Affordable Care Act, often referred to as Obamacare, was recently upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. In short order, the Republican-controlled House took action to repeal the legislation. What is your perspective on the Affordable Care Act? Should it be repealed, or should it be allowed to stand and tweaked as necessary?
I think it should be repealed. I don't think it's a step in the right direction at all. It's a step in the wrong direction, forcing people to buy a defective product, which is the health insurance, which makes their profits by denying people care, which even if people have health insurance, a lot of times they can't afford the deductibles and the co-payments, so they still don't have actual health care. If you wanted actual health care, the logical thing to do in a rational society would be to train more doctors and open more clinics. Or the Green Party stands for a single-payer health care system, which would be Medicare extended to all, as they, the Congress in 1965 thought that the Medicare was going to be extended to all, and it hasn't been. We've taken a major step back. We've taken a major step in the wrong direction, and I would definitely vote to repeal.
Mr. Plummer.
Well, I would also vote to repeal Obamacare, but that doesn't mean that there's not problems with our health care system. There's serious problems with our health care system, and I think those problems need to be addressed very specifically. Unfortunately, Obamacare violates a lot of promises we've made to a lot of people. I look forward to going to Washington because when I vote to repeal Obamacare, I'm going to do two things. First off, I'm going to ensure that we uphold the commitments we've made to our seniors, that we don't cut $700 billion from Medicare, and that we don't put bureaucrats in charge of health care decisions that should be made at the local level. I'm also going to make sure that we restore the 880,000 jobs that it's predicted Obamacare is going to cost our economy. And also, most importantly, that we don't see the largest tax hike in the history of the United States, which we know, per the Supreme Court, that Obamacare is. It's important that we send people to Washington that get rid of this program, but most importantly, also bring ideas to the table to make sure we ensure quality health care and access to health care for all people. The costs of health care in this country have gone through the roof, and we need policies that are going to bring those costs down while maintaining quality access for all Americans.
Mr. Inyer.
The Health Care Reform Act does several things that help the citizens of this district and the citizens of the nation. First of all, everyone that I've talked to in this district supports being able to keep your child on to age 26 on your own health care plan. That helped me. I could put my 24-year-old son back on my health care. They support the end to pre-existing conditions. They support the end to medical caps, the limits on medical costs. So all of those are supported. Now, are there problems with it? Of course there are problems with it. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's change the things that are problems and move on. You know, the Republican-controlled House has voted 33 times to repeal health care, yet they have not voted once for a farm bill. Now, we're suffering through the worst drought in decades, and the farmers desperately need to have a farm bill passed. You know, the Farm Bureau, that is their number one priority, is getting a farm bill passed.
Gary Metro.
Mr. Plummer, my question comes from readers of the Southern Illinoisan. Thank you, folks. Many people will be watching this and all congressional races as a grassroots referendum on the presidency of Barack Obama. Since we're on the SIU at campus, and I'm feeling somewhat academic, please consider the first term of President Obama and assign him a letter grade, A, B, C, D, or F. Please then explain how you reached your decision.
Well, I appreciate the question. I'd give the president probably a D. And I do that because he ran on a campaign where he made a lot of promises to a lot of people that we would end the partisan bickering that's cost us a lot of problems in Washington, D.C., that he'd provide solutions, and he changed the political discourse in this country, and we haven't seen that. Under this administration, we've seen things get worse. We've seen things get worse economically as our unemployment rate continues to go up. We've seen things get worse as Washington's probably more partisan and more ideological than it's ever been. We need to send people to Washington that bring common sense solutions to the problems we're facing because those problems are serious. We need to send people to Washington that understand how to address the economic problems we're facing, how the tax code needs to be reformed so that we can make sure we have quality jobs in Southern Illinois. The joblessness, the unemployment rates, and the struggles that the families of Southern Illinois are facing are very problematic, and they've only gotten worse since President Obama went into office. I think we need to send new people to Washington that are going to change the economic outlook of this country and bring jobs back to Southern Illinois.
Mr. Inyert.
Thank you. I think the president deserves a good solid B. Let me tell you why. When the president took office, this economy was losing 750,000 jobs a month. Last month, the economy gained 120,000 jobs. That's not perfect. It's not an A. It's not an A+, but it's certainly worthy of a B. He's turned around a 750,000 job loss to 120,000 job gain. When he took office, the economy, the financial sector, was collapsing. The Glass-Steagall Act had essentially been repealed. Regulations had been loosened on banks. The big banks and the big Wall Street firms were playing casino with our money. And there had to be a bailout, and there was a bailout of those companies, of those banks. That the TARP program, you might remember, was initiated under the Bush administration. Today, under this economy, those banks are paying the loans back. And
Time, sir. Thank you. Ms. Bradshaw.
I'd have to give President Obama a D also, because he definitely has not lived up to his campaign promises. If you want to talk about jobs, FDR, when he came in 1933, he put 4 million people to work in 2 months. And they planted trees and dug ditches and brought electricity to the rural areas. They did a whole lot of things that we need done now in our own version. We need renewable energy. We need sustainable transportation. We should be putting people. We need more trees planted. We should be putting people to work directly through the government and not by bestowing. Well, for instance, you say that they bailed out the banks. They most certainly did. $16 trillion, and I don't think they've paid it all back. You know, they can come up with $16 trillion for the banks and Wall Street, but they can't come up with a few billion for Main Street. I mean, I think he's done a really bad job, and I'm not even counting the drone attacks killing people all over the world and the increased wars that he's gotten us into.
Beth Hunsdorfer for Mr. Inyart.
When you live in Southern Illinois, you hear politicians talk a lot about jobs, but we still never seem to have enough, especially the high-paying kind. Belleville News Democrat readers want to know what you would do as a member of Congress to promote job creation in the region, what sectors of employment you would expect to grow, and why.
Beth, that's a great question. Now, most of the jobs in this state and in this nation are created not by mega corporations, but rather by mom-and-pop businesses. And what I would do is level the playing field. You know, let's talk about tax fairness. Last year, General Electric, which made billions of dollars in profits and is one of the largest corporations in the world, but they have all of these tax breaks, which enable them to pay zero taxes. Mom-and-pop's corporation, mom-and-pop's business on Main Street, don't have those benefits. They don't have the high-priced accountants and tax lawyers to figure those benefits out. What we need to do is simplify tax credits so that they're available to mom-and-pop businesses. The figure that I saw was that last year in the state of Illinois, 98% of all new jobs were created by mom-and-pop businesses, by Main Street, by small business. And, you know, for 25 years, I was a small businessman, and I was responsible for hiring and making that paycheck. And
time. Thank you very much. Ms. Bradshaw.
Well, mom-and-pop businesses would be helped the best by raising the minimum wage. With people would have more money in their pockets, they would keep mom-and-pop in business, and they wouldn't have to go to Walmart. If the minimum wage of 1968 had kept pace with the worker productivity in this country, it would be $21.72 an hour today. So clearly that's one thing we need to do. And GE, you mentioned GE, that doesn't pay any taxes. For some reason, President Obama put the CEO of GE, Jeffrey Immelt, in charge of his National Jobs Council. And that doesn't seem like a very serious way to make people have more jobs in this country. So I would say that we need to raise the minimum wage to help mom and pop, and we need to put people to work improving our infrastructure to make it more sustainable, and that's how we at really good living wage jobs, and that's how we put people to work in Southern Illinois.
Mr. Plummer.
Beth, I appreciate the question. That's why I'm in this race. I'm in this race because I've seen the unemployment rates in this district go through the roof. Last month, every county in the 12th Congressional District, all 12 of them, had their unemployment rates go up. Five of the top 10 counties in the state of Illinois in terms of highest unemployment are right here in Illinois 12. There's no reason for it. We're tremendously blessed with natural resources, oil, gas, coal, agricultural products. We're tremendously blessed with a wonderful geographic location, access to road, rail, river networks. We're tremendously blessed with SIU Carbondale and Scott Air Force Base. Unfortunately, we're struggling. We're struggling because of poor public policy. Our family businesses are responsible for creating more than 1,000 jobs in this region, in this region. We understand how difficult it is, but we also understand how to get it done. If we're going to bring jobs back here, we need to send people to Washington, D.C. that know what it's like to create jobs. We need true tax reform. We need to roll back the regulatory environment that's crushed our major industries. We need to make sure we have jobs, jobs, jobs. My opponent, a trial lawyer, is in the business of driving jobs out of this region. We need businessmen in Washington to bring industry and jobs to Southern Illinois.
Jennifer Fuller for Mr. Plummer.
Mr. Plummer, there are numerous proposals that would reduce the federal budget and bring greater stability to the nation's finances. You look at the Bowles-Simpson report. Congressman Ryan's budget is yet another. President Obama has his plan as well. Which of these approaches, or is there another, that you would support? And why do you think that it's important to support one or the other?
Well, I appreciate the question. I think that the deficits and the debt that we're facing right now are a huge burden on our economy and job creation, but they're also a huge burden in terms of national security. One reason why I gave President Obama a D, one reason why I think Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have failed us is because they're not willing to work together. If you look at the Bowles-Simpson committee, that was a bipartisan committee that worked together as the president asked them to do, as congressional leaders asked them to do. And when they project or when they gave their suggestion, they were ignored. We need to send people to Washington that are going to address these issues. It's not just about making sure that the revenues are there. It's how we make sure the revenues are there. And one way we make sure the revenues are there is we reform the tax code and we create jobs in this country. If we expand the economic base, if we expand the tax base, and we make sure there's more people participating in the economy, there's more companies being created, there's more jobs being created, we increase revenue to Washington. Democrat presidents like John F. Kennedy have shown it, Ronald Reagan, a Republican president, has shown it, and I know that if we send people to Washington committed to work together, we can show that it can happen again.
Mr. Inyart.
Thank you. You know, let's talk about the real reason that we have such a deficit. And you can't get rid of this deficit by cutting. The Wall Street Journal on July 21st said that if you fired the entire federal workforce, including the entire military, it would only eliminate about one-third of the deficit. The reason for the deficit is because of tax fairness. There is no tax fairness. Let's call the Bush tax cuts what they really are. They really are millionaires' tax cuts. And Mr. Ryan's proposals only exacerbate that problem. George Bush was the first and only president to ever cut taxes during a time of war, during a time of two wars. Now, and worse than that, the taxes that he cut weren't on the middle class. They weren't on working people. The taxes that were cut were on millionaires, people, multi-millionaires. You know, my opponent Mr. Plummer is an inherited multimillionaire. Last year, he made somewhere between $946,000 and $5 million, according to your newspaper, Beth.
Thank you. Ms. Bradshaw.
Okay, the federal deficit could be paid off by cutting the military budget and by raising the taxes on the rich. But we have to realize that in our country, all money is created by debt. So if you actually paid off the entire debt, you'd pretty much cause a deflation and a recession like you've never seen before, which is why they do deficit spending. They do deficit spending to keep the economy going artificially. You mentioned the Bowles-Simpson Commission. I think that's also referred to as the Cat Food Commission. They wanted to cut Social Security and Medicare to balance the federal budget. But anyone that has a paycheck can look at their paycheck and see that Medicare and Social Security are separate from the federal budget. So trying to cut either one to cut the deficit is, frankly, a lie. It's a lie that we are told constantly, so many people believe it. But they are three separate money sources, and you shouldn't be confusing them. The Reagan tax cuts were a start on the way down. All the rich people did with their money was blow it.
Gary Metro for Mr. Inyart.
Mr. Inyart, some people believe coal is part of our DNA in Southern Illinois. It's provided stable, well-paid employment for many generations, and we have a store of high-energy coal beneath our feet. That coal will last at least 100 years. It has more energy in it than all the oil reserves of Saudi Arabia. Coal is controversial, too, and it's been linked to air pollution and health concerns. My question is this: just what should be done with all that coal that's beneath our feet?
Gary, this country desperately needs a long-term strategic energy policy. We've not had that. We have had a dependence on foreign oil for far too long. As you mentioned, our coal here in southern Illinois is high BTU coal. It's got a lot more energy in it. Nothing drives me crazier than to see those mile-long trains hauling coal from the western states across southern Illinois to eastern power plants to be burned. You know, we have the technology to burn Illinois coal. We have a coal research facility here at Southern Illinois University. What we need to do is utilize the technology that we have, drive the cost down on that so that we can burn that coal safely and cleanly, and that can be done. It simply requires a proper application of research and development.
Ms. Bradshaw.
Well, the money that we spend on these boondoggles like the coal, you know, gasification and the pumping the carbon dioxide 170 miles under the surface of the earth, if we spent all that money on renewable energy, on the kind of energy that will be here for past 100 years, then we would be much better off. Burning coal, you're kind of forgetting that burning coal causes mercury pollution of our rivers and lakes. It causes asthma in children downwind. It causes ocean acidification, which destroys the plankton and things, the little organisms in the ocean that supply a good deal of our oxygen, which we as human beings need to survive. Let's not forget we need to breathe. Okay? And worst of all, it causes global warming. I don't think we'll make it 100 years of burning coal if we don't stop burning fossil fuels now and quit turning our planet into a desert.
Mr. Plummer.
Well, I'm going to be really blunt here because I think the voters deserve blunt answers. If I'm your congressman, I'm going to fight tooth and nail in Washington, D.C. to make sure we access our coal, make sure we access the natural resources we've been blessed with. 20 years ago, this area had 37 operating coal mines. Today, we have less than 10. We haven't ran out of coal in southern Illinois. Those coal mines aren't just bringing down the cost of the utility bills the consumers pay. They're not just bringing down our dependency on foreign resources. They're putting people back to work. They're making sure that people in southern Illinois have quality jobs. Those coal miners have a phenomenal quality of life in southern Illinois, and they provide us a resource and a product that the folks of southern Illinois need. Coal mines, the coal industry, the other natural resources we have are jobs, and we need people that are going to fight for jobs. I think I'm the only person up here that has said cap and trade would be catastrophic to southern Illinois. I know cap and trade would be catastrophic, and we see an administration and their liberal allies in Washington trying to institute that policy through regulatory reform because they couldn't get it done legislatively. I'm going to stand up to that and make sure our coal miners have jobs and our consumers have lower costs.
Beth Hunsdorfer to Paula Bradshaw.
Most people know very little about the three of you personally. You all have very different life experiences and careers. Can you tell us why those life experiences and your background would make you a better candidate than the other two?
Well, I've lived longer than Jason, anyhow.
Okay.
I don't know why my background. I'm a nurse. There's seven other nurses in Congress. I think that being a nurse makes you qualified to run for Congress. That means I care about people. I've taken care of people for over 30 years when they're not feeling so good and when in some really bad situations, actually. I'm an emergency room nurse, and I triage people. And triage means you pick out who's going to die sooner, and you go for them first, you know. Well, to me, it looks like our country is at least in a yellow, as we call it. You know, our quality of life is being ruined. So many people are unemployed. We have 7 million empty houses and so many homeless people. We grow six times more food than we need, and we still have hungry people. This economy is not working. And I don't think more of the same is going to make it better.
Thank you. Mr. Plummer.
Sure. I'm in this race because I think my experiences really touch on the problems that we're facing. You know, I grew up in an environment where my parents were both teachers, and my dad decided he wanted to try the American dream and create a business and create jobs. And I've seen that success firsthand, and I've seen the opportunity for other Americans to have that success disappear. When I was born, My family had one lumber yard, and we've grown that to over 46 lumber yards now that provide quality services, but they also provide quality jobs, and we need quality jobs. I understand the problems that businesses and the workers of Southern Illinois are facing because they can't find quality jobs because public policy has driven the industries out of here. They've driven the businesses out of here, and they've driven down the quality of life of the people of Southern Illinois. I'm going to go to Washington to make sure that each and every family in Southern Illinois that has a dream, that wants to create jobs, that wants to create something, has that opportunity, and the resources are there for them. We don't need more trial lawyers like my opponent in Washington, D.C. We need more businessmen in Washington, D.C. who bring jobs back to the families of Southern Illinois.
Mr. Enyart?
Thank you. You know, I think my background mirrors that of the district. The only reason that I got to go to college and on to law school was because of the greatest government program that was ever invented, and that's the GI Bill. I can show you the scars on my forearms from welding slag from working on the welding line at Caterpillar Tractor Company. I know what it's like to have to pay back a student loan, so I've got that background in common. And I was successful in my career. I was successful as a lawyer. I was successful in the military. I rose from being an E-1, the lowest enlisted basic trainee, spent 4 years on active duty, went back in the Guard, and spent 30 years in the National Guard. I left practicing law and a great legal career to command the National Guard for the last 5 years, where we fought floods, blizzards. We deployed the largest combat deployment to Afghanistan. I have real-world experience running a major organization, a $650 million a year budget. I know federal budgeting.
Thank you. At this time in the debate, we'd like to give each of you a one-minute opportunity to rebut anything that you think needs to be addressed at this point. We'll start with Paula Bradshaw.
I guess I would take issue with the idea that we need to run a government like a business. A business is in business to maximize profit for its shareholders, and they'll lay off workers, they'll strip the company of assets, they'll sell off anything of value, and then they'll run the place into bankruptcy. We have been running this country like a business for the last 30 years, but I would take issue. I think we should run this country like a democracy. The government should work for the people of the country and not for the corporations. It should be run for the good of all of us to make sure that we are educated, we are healthy, we have water and food and shelter and all the basics of life that we need, and to protect that for future generations.
Mr. Plummer.
Sure, I think that there's a really distinct thing that needs to be discussed, and that's that Paula and I are both up here, and we stand against Obamacare because I think we believe in fulfilling our commitments to the citizens. There's only one person on this stage that supports Obamacare, and Obamacare cuts over $700 billion from Medicare. Those were monies and promises made to our seniors that are disappearing. Not only does it cut massive amounts of money from Medicare, but also puts 15 bureaucrats in charge of the medical decisions and the path that our seniors have to take in their health life in the hands of bureaucrats instead of where it should be. We need to make sure that we continue our greatness. Our greatness as a country is made because of our respect for property rights, our respect of the rule of law, and that we always fulfill our promises as a nation. We've made huge promises to our seniors. We've made huge promises to our citizens. And we need to send people to Washington that are going to fulfill those promises, make sure the monies are there so that our seniors can live comfortably, and make sure that our youth have jobs as they grow into this economy.
Mr. Enyart.
I'd like each and every one of you to pull your tax return out from last year and look at it. And I'd like you to calculate what percentage of your income got paid in as income taxes. I can tell you what mine is, 28.2% of my income. Now, Mr. Plummer, who inherited millions and made somewhere between $946,000 and $5 million last year, won't share with us what he paid. I think that tax fairness, Mitt Romney paid 14% last year. Now, my total income didn't amount to Mitt Romney's speaking fees last year, but I paid twice the percentage of my income. Warren Buffett, the famous billionaire, has said, is it fair that my secretary pay a higher percentage of her income in taxes than I do? And the answer to that, of course, is no. Let's talk about tax fairness. Let's end these tax loopholes for millionaires that allow them to skate out on paying taxes. Let's level the playing field. Let's get...
Thank you. Now back to the questions from the panelists. Jennifer Fuller for Mr. Enyart.
Mr. Enyart, many leaders say this year's drought is a prime example of why a farm bill is necessary and why crop insurance and farm subsidies need to be a part of such legislation. Still, it's hung up in Congress. How important, in your opinion, is a farm bill and what should be included in it?
Jennifer, a farm bill is absolutely critical, and it needs to be passed, and it needs to be passed now. And it needs to have crop insurance as part of that. Now, here's the problem. The Republicans under John Boehner, who was at a $2,500 a plate breakfast for Mr. Plummer the other day, didn't have time, couldn't get his caucus to pass a farm bill. But he brought up repeal of the Health Care Reform Act 33 times, knowing full well it would be defeated. But he did it time and time again, wasted the taxpayers' money, wasted time, failed miserably to pass a farm bill, that we all know is needed. You know, I've walked out there in those corn crops. I know what a corn crop is supposed to look like, and it sure doesn't look like what it looks like. If that farm bill is not passed, farmers can't plan next year. You know, you can't get by on a month extension, which is the kind of games that Mr. Boehner and the Republican Congress have been playing and that my opponent, Mr. Plummer, would like to continue.
Ms. Bradshaw.
A farm bill should really be about making sure that a country and its citizens are well fed. 30 years ago, the farm bill focus changed to supporting agribusiness, which threw hundreds of thousands of farmers off their land in the 80s. And the weight of the amount of people overweight in this country in the last 30 years has increased to 33% of the population. Clearly, this farm bill is focusing on the wrong things. I believe the farm bill should protect our farmers, especially our small farmers. Maybe we can get some farmers back into the business. I believe that it should focus on healthy food for our citizens and not so much on giving million-dollar subsidies to wealthy investors that never go near corn and have no idea what a healthy corn field would look like. Remember that we grow our corn outside, so global warming affects our corn crops also. So the corn doesn't grow in air conditioning.
Mr. Plummer.
Sure. I've been pushing on this issue for a long time. We need a farm bill, and we need a farm bill now. I've been meeting with farmers and folks in the ag industry across this district for months now. This drought is one of the worst we've ever seen, and we need to make sure that our farmers have certainty. Certainty is something I hear all the time in my town hall forums where we invite everybody. I meet and greet voters all the time because I want to hear their input, and I think the voters deserve to know where I stand on the issues. When I hear them talk about the farm bill, I hear them talk about certainty. I hear them talk about EPA regulations that want to regulate how much dust a combine kicks up. I hear about Department of Labor regulations that want to prohibit 15- and 14-year-old kids from working on the family farm. This nation was built by 14- and 15-year-old kids working on their family farm, and we need to make sure our farmers have the certainty they need. We need to make sure all of our small businessmen, all of the folks in this economy, have the certainty that they need and the certainty that Democrat leadership right now is not providing. I look forward to changing that and bringing jobs back to Southern Illinois when I go to Washington.
Gary Metro for Paula Bradshaw.
Ms. Bradshaw, we've all been horrified by recent deadly shooting sprees in Aurora, Colorado, near Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and now in College Station, Texas. And there have been calls for tighter laws on firearms, including restrictions on the sale of assault weapons. Yet, in some of these shootings at least, the weapons were legally obtained. What should be done in response to these tragedies and to minimize the chances of future attacks?
Well, I agree that the Second Amendment protects American citizens' right to bear arms, and I agree that Americans have a right to own rifles and such like that. Assault weapons, if it was a carefully worded bill that actually controlled assault weapons, I see no reason for assault weapons to be available to American citizens. Of course, the United States produces like a third of all weapons in the world, and we traffic them all over the world. So I don't know how we think we can keep them from getting in the hands of our own citizens. I think the problem of gun violence probably has more to do with our violent culture, because people in Canada and Switzerland have high rates of gun ownership, and you don't see them going out to movie theaters and blowing apart their fellow citizens. I think we should maybe take a little look inward and see why we're such a violent culture and why we kill so many of our own.
Mr. Plummer?
Well, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I always have been, and I always will be. I'm a life member of the National Rifle Association, a life member of the Illinois State Rifle Association, a life member of Gun Owners of America, which I'm very proud endorsed me a couple weeks ago, because they understand the Second Amendment and the fact that we need to maintain the Second Amendment as part of the fabric of our nation. The Second Amendment ensures our right to bear arms. It's something our founding fathers thought was important, and I think it's just as important today. We live in a dangerous world. We need to make sure that our folks have the rights that they have been promised, and we need to make sure we have elected officials that are ensuring those rights. When people go to Washington, there's oftentimes overreach, and I think things are pretty simple. The Second Amendment's a very simple thing to me. When I go to Washington, I'm going to fight tooth and nail to make sure we keep the Second Amendment, and I think we need to expand certain things. Why don't people in Illinois have the right to concealed carry? We're one out of 50 states that don't allow our citizens the right to concealed carry. My best friend from high school and I had lunch yesterday at Chick-fil-A in Fairview Heights, and we were talking about concealed carry. He said, everyone in law enforcement wants concealed carry. It ensures our safety.
Mr. Andrew.
I've been a gun owner since I was 12 years old. You know, I grew up in a farming community, a small community, and most everybody had a shotgun hanging over the kitchen door, and so that you could walk out the door and go rabbit hunting or squirrel hunting. So I've taken an oath twice to support the Constitution of the United States of America, and the Second Amendment is part of that. I still have that shotgun when I was 12 years old. It was a 410 J.C. Higgins, and it cost $19.50 from Sears and Roebuck. And my dad gave it to me, and I still have it. I've owned long guns and handguns, and while I was on military duty, I've probably fired every small arm that's in the inventory. Assault weapons is as it's been bandied about in the press, is a misnomer. Automatic weapons have been banned in this country since the 30s and should be, or not banned, but they're very, very tightly controlled, and it's virtually a military or police weapon.
Beth Hunsdorfer to Jason Plummer.
Mr. Plummer, if you were asked to vote against your principles on one issue to gain support for another issue that was a high priority for you and your constituents, would you do so? Why or why not?
Absolutely not. I, you know, growing up, I was taught you only have two things in life, and that's your word and your name. And I think one thing that I appreciate and one thing that I think is great about our campaign is we don't go to Washington beholden to anybody. We go to Washington to represent the people of Southern Illinois. I can tell you, because I hear it every day and I've seen it in my lifetime, the folks of Southern Illinois have been long neglected. They've been neglected by the folks out of Chicago and Springfield. They've been neglected by the Metro East power brokers who have controlled this congressional seat for far too long. I'm going to Washington, D.C. to represent the folks that have been neglected. I'm not beholden to anybody. I wouldn't sacrifice my principles for anything. I think politicians going to Washington, sacrificing their principles so that they can continue being in Washington and they can hold on to those seats of power is what's gotten us into a lot of the problems we have. We need to send common sense people to Washington with integrity that's going to ensure that they represent the values of their constituents.
Mr. Andrew?
Thank you. You know, Beth, that's a really tough question. When I was young, I used to think everything was black or white, much like Mr. Plummer does. Things aren't black or white. You know, a lot of things are gray. Now, when you ask that question, I have to weigh it. I have to balance it. I have to ask myself, what's important to the people of this district? How important is it? How important is my principle? You can't just say, no, I would never do that. Now, you know, of course, I value my principles. That's what I've stood on for 36 years of military service. It's very important to me. I'm going to be hired to represent these people. I'm going to be hired to represent the people of the district. So when you put that question out there, I have to look to the people. You know, it's called the House of Representatives for a reason, because you're representing the people. You can't just vote your own beliefs. You can't just vote for your own tax interests. You have to vote for the people.
Ms. Bradshaw.
Well,
Well, as a Green, we get this kind of question a lot. I mean, we want people to vote for us because we want people to vote for our ideals. But there are a lot of people out there that will only vote for us if they live in a so-called safe state. You know, like Texas, you know, is going to be Republican no matter what you vote. So people will vote Green. Or in Illinois, it's going to be Democrat no matter, so people will vote Green. And I kind of think that's what I would do in Congress. I would never vote against my principles if it meant, you know, if it counted. But if I was trading a vote and it didn't really make any difference on the actual outcome, you know what I'm saying? Like if I traded a vote and the thing I was against still failed, then I might do it. But I would never compromise my principles by voting for something wrong to get something right.
Jennifer Fuller for Paula Bradshaw.
Ms. Bradshaw, when it comes to the federal government's role in education, two questions. Should the No Child Left Behind Act be reauthorized, changed, or scrapped altogether? And should federal dollars be allocated to private elementary and secondary programs like charter schools and school vouchers?
The No Child Left Behind Act has a really great name, and if it actually left no child behind, I would be all for it. But what it actually has done is pretty much turned our schools into little factories for teaching kids how to take tests and caused great stress for the teachers and the principals that have to continually improve every year. I was in Nebraska and I was reading the paper there, and they said that they had set standards for their kids, you know, for the second graders. You know, they had to learn to read a certain amount, I guess, Dick and Jane or whatever, and do numbers. And the kids were all doing it. So were they proud that the kids were learning what they said they wanted them to learn? No, they were going to raise the standards because they wanted to always make the kids learn more and more and more. And I don't think that's right. And absolutely not to put public money to a private school. That is outrageous. As a people, we want to educate our children collectively, you know, to make sure that they know what they need to know to be.
Thank you. Mr. Plummer.
You know, you get a lot of questions when you're running for office, and oftentimes they come from a wide variety of areas. And I always tell people, I think when you're making decisions, you have to go back to what are the core functions of government. I think core functions of government are national security, infrastructure spending, making sure we have the infrastructure needs we need. I think another core function is making sure our children are prepared when they enter the workforce. As I crisscross this district, we have tremendously high unemployment rate. We need more jobs, but we need to make sure the kids that are coming out of schools are prepared to take on those jobs. All too often I hear that that's not the case. That's not because of an educational system that's failing. That's because I think good ideas gone bad. We need to make sure that the tools in each area of this country are there for our children. And I think that's why I believe strongly that the best decisions are made locally, because the closer you are to a problem, probably the odds are you're going to know the answer a little bit better, but you're also going to understand the impact on that area. I was in Carterville, Illinois, earlier today. You know, Carterville school district's in the top 15 school districts in the state of Illinois. We've shown in Southern Illinois we can do education right. We need to listen to the people locally.
Mr. Reinyard.
You know, my daughter-in-law, Tanya, is an eighth grade teacher in Belleville, and for that she's going to go immediately to heaven. I think, and I have talked to her about this problem, I met last night with the Illinois Education Association, and we talked about this. And the problem is they're teaching to the test. They don't have time to teach critical thinking skills, and that's what an education is about. You know, what built this country is our public education system. We had the greatest public education system in the world, and I'm a product of that, and I'm a product of the GI Bill and being able to go to a public school and get an education for somebody who started with no money in life. Now, as to the question about vouchers for private schools, taxpayer dollars should not pay for private education. If people want a private education, then they should be prepared to pay for it. But taxpayer funding.
Time, sir. Thank you. Mr. Gary Metro has a question for Jason Plummer.
Mr. Plummer, we may be in a drought this summer. We've talked about it earlier tonight. But the spring of 2011 brought record flooding to Southern Illinois and to the 12th Congressional District. That district is bordered by the Ohio and the Mississippi rivers. We depend on the levees along those rivers to keep our communities safe from flooding. What role should the federal government play in building and maintaining those levees?
They should play a very important role. We're bordered by the Mississippi and the Ohio. We've got the Kaskaskia going right through the middle of the district. And those rivers are very important to us economically, just as they can be dangerous to our small communities if we don't keep them in check. The federal government plays an important role in that. We need to make sure that the resources are there to keep that infrastructure in place. Without those great rivers, our farmers aren't going to be able to get their products to the global marketplace. We're not going to be able to get the coal that we need to mine in southern Illinois out into the global marketplace. We need those rivers. Our communities thrive off those rivers, and we need to make sure the infrastructure spending is there to maintain the integrity of those rivers, the integrity of the communities that surround them.
Mr. Inyart.
Gary, thanks for that question. I know a little bit about levees. The flood of 2011, I was on the Ohio River, and when the Corps of Engineers wouldn't dynamite the Bird Point levee to save the towns and the property and the lives of southern Illinoisans, I got the Army Corps of Engineers commander up here, and I put him in an Illinois National Guard Blackhawk helicopter, and I flew him up and down that river to show him what was at stake. And we convinced, you know, the state of Missouri sued us, but we convinced him and the court that it was the right thing to do. In the flood of 08, we had 1,600 airmen and soldiers up on the Mississippi River defending Alton and Quincy all up and down. And let me tell you something, that although the state of Iowa lost over 40 citizens' lives in that flood, we didn't lose one because of the great work that was done. Now, clearly, the levee system was built by the federal government, needs to be maintained by the federal government. That is an infrastructure project, much like interstate highways.
Thank you. Ms. Bradshaw.
I think the federal government has a role to play in all of our infrastructure. And I think that levees are good and that we should maintain them, but if you continue taking the coal out of the ground and burning it, we're going to have floods that levees can't contain. We're going to have droughts that, you know, our rivers aren't going to be able to replenish our fields because we don't have enough water. I mean, I think the number one thing to worry about with our rivers and our infrastructure is to change our infrastructure to sustainable transportation and sustainable energy, quit burning coal, quit burning fossil fuels, so that we don't have these terrible extremes of weather that we've been seeing in the last few years. I'm counting also the fires that the federal government helps to fight. The fires in New Mexico, Colorado, Texas, and all over the federal government doesn't help in Australia or Russia, but we've had wildfires all over the world. We have to change our ways.
Next question comes from Beth Hunsdorfer to Mr. Inyart.
Mr. Inyart, student loan debt now totals over $1 trillion, larger than any form of consumer debt and averaging around $25,000 for two-thirds of today's college graduates. 3 million Americans owe some sort of private student loan debt, amounting to nearly $150 billion. Given the difficult job market for many college graduates, should Congress restore the bankruptcy exemption for private student loan debt or give debtors some new option for debt relief?
Beth, I know what it's like to have to pay back a student loan. I had a student loan when I got out of law school, and I paid it off. But luckily, because of the GI Bill and the part-time jobs that I had and the Illinois Veterans Scholarship, I didn't have as big a student loan as many students do today. You know, when the bankruptcy code was revised, it was revised not to protect debtors, not to protect students, but to protect banks. Now, once again, you have the consumer, you have the individual suffering because big banks get protected. Now, I think that we need to have a revision in light of the economic circumstances and in light of the fact that there are certainly job problems today, although the job market is gradually getting better under President Obama, unlike under former President Bush. But I think that we need to seriously look at this issue over student debt.
Ms. Bradshaw.
A college education is touted by the 1% now as a way to overcome the lack of wages that people without a college education have. I don't think you should have to have a college education to have a living wage. I think we should You can be a college, a high school graduate, or even a high school dropout and be able to work at a living wage. And the second thing is, I don't think people should go into debt to pay for college at all. If they're qualified, college should be free or nearly free. I'm surprised you had student loans, because when my husband went to law school, we didn't take out any student loans. I worked and put him through law school, and we didn't take out any loans at all because it was much more affordable. College was much more affordable back then. Right now, you're right, the banks and the colleges are treating our children like cash cows to be put into indentured debt slavery for life, and I think that's a terrible way to treat our children.
Mr. Plummer.
Well, I think the best way to solve this problem is to make sure this problem is not taking place. When I went to college, I worked and I was in the ROTC program, which is why I'm an intelligence officer in the Navy Reserves today. I made sure that I paid for my college. We need to make sure that all kids that want to go to college, want to go to a four-year university, a two-year university, have the opportunity to have a job so they can pay their way through college. Right now, the unemployment rates we see among the youth of this country are devastating, especially in Southern Illinois. Now, my opponent says that the job market's gradually getting better. Last month, the unemployment rate went up nationally. Last month, every county in this congressional district, all 12 of them, saw their unemployment rates go up. If that's gradually getting better, I'd hate to see what it is when it gets worse, because I'm afraid with the failed policies of this administration, things are going to continue to get worse. We need to make sure we send people to Washington. They're going to improve the job market for all Americans, but especially our children, so they can plant roots in our small town, stay in Southern Illinois, and build this area back up.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end of our questions from the media panel. Candidates now will each make a one-minute closing statement, the order of which was determined by the drawing earlier this evening. Paula Bradshaw will make the first closing statement.
Thank you. People sometimes ask me if I see any difference between the Democrat and Republican parties. I do. The Republican Party makes a virtue out of Wall Street ransacking America and suckers people into cheering for more of it. The Democratic Party quietly goes along with Wall Street thievery and suckers people into believing that that isn't part of it. Only the Green Party and our candidates can be counted on to stand up for Main Street against the corporate robber barons. Only a party and candidates who reject corporate donations and lobbyists can be counted upon to safeguard our air, water, land, our public assets and services, and to put America back to work by investing in sustainable energy and transportation, rebuilding our cities, refurbishing our housing, teaching our children, caring for our elderly and others who need it, and restoring our natural environment. There's much work to be done, but we have a lot of people that need work. You should elect the Green Party, you should elect me, and let's get America back to work, building a good society.
Mr. Plummer.
As I said in my opening statement, this is an area tremendously blessed with natural resources. It's an area tremendously blessed with geographic resources. We have a tremendous workforce. I think the human talent in Southern Illinois is great as anywhere. We've got good citizens, good Americans, hardworking people. Unfortunately, this is an area that's been devastated. It's been devastated by poor public policy. I'm going to Washington, D.C. to represent the type of public policy that will bring jobs and businesses back to Southern Illinois. I know how to create jobs because I've been creating jobs in this region for a long time. We need to make sure we also have candidates to talk about the issues that are positive and offer solutions. I think the folks of Southern Illinois understand the problems they're facing. They see things getting worse. They want to hear solutions. They want to hear answers. They want to make sure they can hold their elected officials accountable. Southern Illinois has been long neglected for far too long, and I want to change that. It's been controlled by the insiders from St. Clair County. I want to represent this entire district. I want to bring jobs back to this entire district, and with your support, through proper public policy, we're going to make Southern Illinois thrive once again.
Mr. Inyard.
Mr. Plummer's statement that insiders from St. Clair County is amusing since he lives in St. Clair County. But at any rate, let's put the political rhetoric aside. This is a job interview. What do you look for when you're hiring somebody? You look for experience. You look for leadership. You look for accomplishments. Who would you hire? Would you hire someone who has more than 30 years' experience running a business? Someone who was responsible for every paycheck, every expense of that business? Would you hire someone who has worked with Republican and Democratic legislators to get new armories and the proper equipment and to train your sons and your daughters, to train our National Guardsmen? someone who was responsible for the last 5 years for the security and safety of 13 million Illinois citizens and who ran a department with a $650 million a year federal budget. Mr. Plummer has 8 years since college.
We've come to the end of our first congressional debate of the 2012 general election season. We want to thank the candidates for their participation. Paula Bradshaw of the Green Party from Carbondale, Republican Jason Plummer of O'Fallon, and Democrat William Enyart of Belleville. Everyone in the audience has been very patient holding their applause. Now's the time to do it. Thank you very much. We also want to thank our panelists, Jennifer Fuller of WSIU Radio, Gary Metro of the Southern Illinoisan, and Beth Hunsdorfer of the Belleville News Democrat. Thanks also to the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University Carbondale and the Jackson County League of Women Voters for their support and timing the event tonight. We appreciate that. The candidates have agreed to participate in two more debates this election season. The second debate in the series will take place on Thursday, September 20th, at the Marion Cultural and Civic Center at 7 p.m., That debate will be streamed live at thesouthern.com and at bnd.com. WSIU Television will broadcast the debate on Friday, September 21st at 8 p.m. on the station. The third debate will be held on Wednesday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at Lindenwood University in Belleville. The debate will be streamed live again at thesouthern.com and at bnd.com. The debate will be televised on Friday, October 12th at 8 p.m. on WSIU. Both the Marion and Belleville events will be open to the public on a first-come, first-served basis. Thank you for watching this debate. Good night from Carbondale.